For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. With so much going on, we are so pleased to have United States Senator Chris Murphy with us now on All Things Considered. Have you had a chance to enjoy your new house you just purchased in Hartford, sir?
Yeah, I'm glad to be back in the neighborhood. I grew up in Wethersfield, just a stone's throw away from our new home in the Sheldon Charter Oak neighborhood, just south of downtown. And while we're still doing some work on a very old house, we're excited to be in the capital city, a little bit closer to work, a little bit closer to family, a good deal all around.
As you know, Senator, everyone is buzzing about the COVID outbreak at the White House that's ensnared many folks there, including President Trump. How much has this shaken up Washington, and how do you see it affecting anything over the next 30 days, from the Supreme Court confirmation process to the election?
Well, I think primarily about how it affects the country and how it affects Connecticut. We're pulling for the president. I think he, had a pretty serious case here, and I hope he gets better, as well as, the dozens of people that have been infected through this spread throughout the White House. But what worries me is that the president just hasn't learned, and he and his staff are still modeling really terrible behavior. His staff should be quarantining if they've been in close contact with the president. President, himself, needs to be wearing a mask, needs to be staying away from, folks that are not infected. And he just has not yet shown the level of seriousness that we would hope. And, the problem is when you're not having that behavior modeled at the highest levels of government, it makes it hard for the rest of the country to do the right thing as well.
We're hearing now a third member of the Senate has come down with COVID-19. Could that in any way slow down the confirmation process of Amy Coney Barrett?
It probably should, but I'm not sure it will. At least one of our Republican colleagues who is presently positive with COVID said that, he would put on a spacesuit to come vote on Amy Coney Barrett's nomination if that's what it took. I think my Republican colleagues are so intent on ramming this nomination through, are so excited about the prospect of the Supreme Court finally overturning the Affordable Care Act that they're going to do anything possible to get that done. Now, we'll obviously try to put up a fight here and try to convince enough of our colleagues to vote no on a nominee who I think is going to fundamentally change the country if she's put on the court. But I don't know that COVID is going to stop them.
A few days ago, sir, you wrote a troubling Twitter thread saying that the Russians have actually ramped up interference in our election from 2016 until now, and that this fact is being actively covered up by the White House in a plot that includes a Russian agent sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury Department and efforts by the White House to deflect scrutiny of Russia onto China and Iran. Now, did I get all that right, number one? And what's been the response to your thread?
Well, I don't think I broke any news. What I said is, frankly, all public knowledge. The top-ranking intelligence official at the Department of Homeland Security filed a whistleblower complaint. That's extraordinary for somebody at that senior level to file a whistleblower complaint. And his complaint was pretty simple. The White House was telling him to bury information about Russian interference in the 2020 election. I summed up everything that I know and everything that's been public in that Twitter thread. I simply was repeating what Trump administration officials have come out and said, which is that the Russian effort to interfere in the 2020 election is bigger than the effort in 2016. They have Russian agents in the field in the United States right now that are trying to sow damaging narratives about Vice President Biden, and that the Trump White House is trying to keep it all quiet because they don't want people to know that the Russian government at the highest levels are working really hard to try to get this president reelected.
Well, sir, you are correct that everything you said was public knowledge, but I feel like by the very nature that you felt the need to put that threat out there, I took that as an acknowledgement that some things can hide in plain sight. I think what you were trying to do was take these things that were hiding in plain sight, put them together in one place, and point out something that some dots that needed to be connected. So given that, given your connecting of the dots, has there been a response?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, my worry is that with, you know, all of this other life-changing news that seems to be breaking on a day-to-day basis, we have, you know, lost sort of track of the importance of exposing Russian interference in our elections. And as I mentioned in that Twitter thread, you know, there in fact was a sanctions announcement against this Ukrainian legislator named Andrei Derkach, who has been showing up on, you know, American TV channels, has been meeting with people very close to the president. And that sanctions announcement sort of mentioned in the fine print that he is indeed a Russian agent. That normally would be, you know, the subject of a major press conference. Here it was buried in a sanctions announcement. Has there been a response? You know, I think every time that we sort of draw this out in public, the administration is pressured to do a little bit more. And since my thread on Twitter, I don't know if this is connected or not, but the administration has moved against another Russian-aligned actor named Telezhenko. He was one of the people that was feeding information to Congress about Joe Biden. He now has had his visa pulled. So there have been additional steps taken by the administration. I don't know if they're sufficient.
All right. Then there's the story that really touched home here in this shop. The story of the alleged political interference going on at Voice of America. To catch listeners up, two conservative political appointees at the federal agency that oversees the Voice of America. That's an organization, by the way, now run by a Trump appointee. Well, these two appointees have apparently recently investigated arguably the Voice of America's most prominent journalist, Steve Herman, to make the case that he's biased against President Trump. Now, you tweeted this week that this is an important story and that you were talking with your team on how Congress should react. What's the latest on the congressional reaction?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, a complicated scandal to unwind for a lot of Americans. You understand why it's so important. But the Voice of America, while it is federally funded, has intentionally been given editorial control over their content. They are supposed to be an objective source of journalism, not influenced by whoever is in political power, whoever controls the White House. And, you know, that has changed under the Trump administration. He, as you mentioned, appointed as the head of the agency that oversees the Voice of America, a conservative filmmaker, somebody who is there to try to make sure that all of these objective news sources start to toe the Trump line. And they are, I think, trying to undergo a campaign of intimidation against any journalists who say anything that's not glowingly positive about the president at Voice of America. And that's really, really damaging because people listen to Voice of America all over the world. And if they think that it's just an organ of the White House, they'll tune it out. They listen to Voice of America because they think they're going to get the straight scoop about what's happening in America, but also what's happening in their country. And once VOA loses that reputation for objectivity, then it ceases to be, you know, a useful mechanism to fight back against a lot of the foreign propaganda that we see around the world from Russia and others.
You take all of these stories together, from the Supreme Court to White House politicization of formerly apolitical agencies, and it leads to the hard truth that your party right now, the Democratic Party, on the federal level at the very least, seems nearly powerless to stop your opponents from doing whatever they want. There have been so many articles written about how the Democratic Party set the stage for all this by not paying close attention to state races across the country during the Obama years. Do you feel the Dems have learned their lesson going forward? And even if the party has learned that lesson, is it too late to make substantive change anytime soon, given the army of young conservative judges the GOP has managed to get on the bench since taking control of the Senate 6 years ago?
Well, you know, listen, I'm not a doomsdayer about the Democratic Party. We, you know, won more votes for our presidential candidate in 2016 than Republicans did. We routinely get more people voting for our candidates for the House and the Senate. You know, the structure of our democracy right now is unfortunately fairly anti-majoritarian. The nature of the Electoral College and the composition of the United States Senate means that a lot more people in this country can vote for Democrats and still not get Democrats in charge. And I think, you know, we'll have to look at all of that if we're able to win this presidential election. The Democratic Party, you know, has to be better, right? We've got to fight in every state. We shouldn't give up on, you know, states that right now are controlled by Republicans. And, you know, we have to give people ideas that they can really sink their teeth into. You know, this is not a moment in my mind for, you know, incremental change. Right now, we've got to deliver big solutions to people. So, you know, that's why, for instance, I have been a supporter of the idea of guaranteeing free college access to every American, because I think that will draw more people to the Democratic Party, frankly, in states that are traditionally blue and states that are traditionally red. So we need to compete everywhere. We need to have big, bold ideas that are going to attract people to our party. And hopefully, you know, we will do very well in 2020 and pick up some wins in states that folks, you know, hadn't thought of as fertile for Democratic victories, like Texas or like Georgia. You know, hopefully we'll surprise some people.
Senator Chris Murphy, thank you so much for visiting with us.
Appreciate it.